You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasso. Today we will be speaking with Dr. Joseph Bick, Chief Medical Officer at California Medical Facility, a medical referral prison in the California Department of Corrections, and co-editor of HEP Report, published by Brown University Medical School. Board certified in internal medicine and infectious diseases, Dr. Bick joined the Department of Corrections in 1993. At California Medical Facility, Dr. Bick's responsibilities include directing the 550-patient HIV treatment unit, serving as chairperson of the Infection Control Committee, directing the bloodborne pathogen and tuberculosis control programs, and serving as medical director of the Robert Evans Alexander Hospice. Dr. Bick is also an assistant clinical professor in the Division of Infectious and Immunological Diseases at the University of California, Davis. Today, he will discuss HIV treatment for prisoners and the issues that must be considered when treating this population. Welcome to today's live talk, Dr. Bick.
Hi, Michelle.
Well, we're happy to have you here. We're tackling a big topic today, but let's focus on the significance of treating the offender population. Can you talk about why jails and prisons are important to think about when we discuss treatment of HIV in this country?
Well, Michelle, as you know, about 3% of Americans spent time in a prison or jail this last year. That's over 2 million Americans who are incarcerated, and that's a 500% increase over the past 30 years. In addition, there are about 12 million Americans who are released from this nation's jails and prisons every year. And the prevalence of HIV among inmates varies from facility to facility, but on average, 2 to 4% of inmates are infected with HIV. This is five times the national average. Remarkably, about 20% of those with HIV in this country pass through our jails and prisons every year. That's about 100,000 individuals with HIV who are released every year. So it's an enormous problem.
The prevalence of HIV in prisons is much higher, as you were saying, than the general community. Is the first step to working on treating this population testing? And what is California Department of Corrections doing in this regard?
Well, in California, we offer voluntary testing upon demand to all prisoners. And in addition, we're exploring a number of options to increase the number of inmates who choose to test. Studies have been done in the non-incarcerated population and have shown that too many people are being diagnosed late in the course of their disease. By that I mean about 40% of individuals are found to have a T-cell count of less than 200 when they're first diagnosed as HIV infected. And when you look back at those individuals who are newly diagnosed, about 40% of those saw a clinician in the year or two before their HIV diagnosis with some other condition that might have prompted testing for HIV, something like thrush or recurrent bacterial pneumonia or another sexually transmitted disease. So there's an opportunity out there for testing that could be improved upon. At our facility here in Vacaville, we're looking at a number of different methods, including increased peer education, prisoners teaching prisoners, increased focus on staff education of prisoners, and some alternatives to the traditional blood testing for HIV, such as urine and oral fluid testing for HIV.
Now, testing is voluntary in the California Department of Corrections?
It is in California. Every state has different policies and procedures concerning testing. Some mandatorily test all inmates on arrival. Some test on arrival and on discharge from the prison or jail, and some just at request. There are a few select situations in California where the testing is mandated by the courts. These are typically in situations of sexual assaults or violent crimes where it's thought that there might be a risk of transmission from the prisoner to another individual.
So it's really dependent on the inmate seeing the importance of being tested and ultimately being treated if they're positive.
That's right. In California, it's almost entirely dependent upon the patients voluntarily deciding to test.
Now, in addition to testing for HIV, is it a good idea to test for the presence of other infectious diseases? And why is that? Can you explain for our audience why that would be important in relation to HIV?
Absolutely. I mean, jails and prisons house a huge concentration of individuals who are at high risk for disease. And this is really an excellent opportunity for us to impact on the health of the nation. Many of our patients don't access health care prior to their incarceration, and most of them will one day be released to the community. And if we just look at figures of inmates who are being released every year, there are about 1 million prisoners who are released who are infected with hepatitis C every year, about 500,000 with sexually transmitted diseases, about 500,000 who are infected with tuberculosis, and about 100,000 with HIV. And in addition to communicable diseases, there's a huge burden of other treatable conditions, such as hypertension, diabetes, asthma, mental illness, and substance abuse. So those of us working within correctional facilities have a tremendous opportunity to make a difference for the greater public health.
Now, some of those diseases, they can occur with HIV, and is it correct that it can make it more complicated to treat?
Absolutely. As you can imagine, trying to have patients adhere to complicated medication regimens of pills multiple times every day with a disease like HIV that's often very unforgiving to those who are not perfectly adherent can be very challenging. About 3/4 of our patients have a history of substance abuse disorders, about 10 to 15% have major mental disorders, and these can get in the way of their ability to adhere to life-sustaining therapies.
There have been some new developments, and while we're on the testing subject, I thought I'd ask you this question, but there have been some new developments in testing that might make it actually easier to get an idea of a range of different problems that an inmate might have.
Well, what's really needed is different methods to test individuals who are moving through correctional systems at a fast pace. If you look at some of our jails around the country, they may process several hundred individuals in a day. By that I mean people who come in, they're booked, and they're released within 24 hours. And so traditional testing methods that rely on blood tests that may take several days to several weeks to get results just aren't going to be as effective as other things that can be done where information is obtained within hours or minutes. So there are some tests available now, urine testing, oral fluid testing, some finger stick testing that can get that important information back to the clinician and to the patient in a much shorter turnaround time. And I think that that's going to make a big difference in our ability to identify individuals who are in fact infected with diseases.
And are there also some that can test for multiple diseases at a time?
Well, right now we have the ability through urine testing, for example, to test for gonorrhea and chlamydia and HIV. And hopefully over the next couple of years we'll be able to test for more conditions through a urine sample as well. One of the other benefits of using urine or oral fluid testing over blood is it decreases the risk of needle sticks to staff and also decreases the problems that come along with transportation of blood specimens. And so I'm hopeful that as time goes by, there will be better methodologies for identification of some of these conditions.
Now, once we understand who is infected in our facilities, then we need to think about treatment. The guidelines for treatment that corrections agencies follow are the community standards, but where exactly do those guidelines come from?
Well, I think most experts who are treating HIV now will rely basically on guidelines such as those that have been developed by the Panel on Clinical Practices for Treatment of HIV Infection. These guidelines were created by a panel that was convened by the Department of Health and Human Services several years ago. And they're available on the Internet. They're regularly being updated. And they do provide a good consensus document that's continually updated that provides treating clinicians information on how to treat those who are infected with HIV.
And that website?
Those guidelines are posted at www.hiv.gov ATIS.org.
Great. I need to know it.
Yeah. It's a really easy website to remember, and it has a lot of other information on it that's very helpful. Another helpful document, for example, is the U.S. Public Health Service's Infectious Disease Society of America guidelines for the prevention of opportunistic infections in persons who are infected with HIV. And that's available also at the same website.
Now, there was a recent consensus conference that discussed some of these guidelines. Were there some changes that people need to note?
There was a consensus panel this past summer that looked at treatment for hepatitis C and had a lot of interesting information as it relates to the co-infected individual, people who are infected with both HIV and hepatitis C. And the rest of the guidelines are updated on a regular basis. Whenever there is new information in the literature that can be of use to clinicians, the guidelines are updated fairly promptly on the Internet.
Okay, so they just need to check there and see what's new.
That's right.
Great. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Joseph Bick, Chief Medical Officer at California Medical Facility, about treating prisoners with HIV. Dr. Bick, can I get you to talk about what some of the biggest obstacles for corrections agencies might be when treating inmates who are HIV positive?
That's a good question. You know, I think there are a number of challenges facing those of us who are working in correctional health care. In some cases, it's a lack of leadership. There may not be individuals within a particular jail or prison who are motivated to address these issues. Some of the problems are just logistical. How do you deal with 800 or 1,000 inmates coming through your facility every day who are coming in and leaving? One of the problems that we face regularly is something called a lockdown, where because of security needs, patients are not allowed to move about the facility as they might normally. And this can interfere with medication delivery, with lab tests, with clinical visits. We also face patients who are transferring from facility to facility. So it can be a tremendously challenging environment within which to work. But I think when you look at this patient population and understand that to a large extent, many of them don't have any access to health care prior to their incarceration, that these challenges are not insurmountable.
And one of the other challenges I think that HIV specialists face in corrections is that the patient has to be ready to go through with this treatment because they can't really go off. Is that correct?
That's a good point. And I think one thing that's important to stress, that the initial prescription of antiretroviral therapy for chronic HIV infection is rarely an emergency. In most cases, there is an opportunity to sit down with the patient, take some time, educate them, and usually have several sessions for education before you actually launch into therapy. Once the patient starts therapy, and if they haven't been appropriately educated, and so that there are lapses in their therapy, they can, in a fairly short time, develop resistant virus that can be very challenging to treat. So I think that a very crucial part of the treatment process is the education, both staff to patient. Peer education is extraordinarily helpful. And working to develop a rapport with the patient so they truly understand why therapy is necessary, and hopefully then when they are prepared to accept therapy, can do it in a way that's going to be most effective for the treatment of their disease.
Is it also the case that some of the problems that patients in corrections might present with, such as substance abuse issues or mental health issues, that those have to be worked out either before or in concert with medical treatment?
Absolutely. You can imagine how difficult it is just adhering to therapy when you don't have any comorbid conditions. Most of us, I think, can recall being prescribed therapy from our own clinician and missing doses, forgetting doses, going to work and forgetting our pills, traveling and forgetting our medications. Then if you throw into the mix individuals who have comorbidities like active mental illness, ongoing substance abuse, have no place to live, have no resources for food, it can be tremendously challenging for our patients to adhere to their therapy.
So important to note as you sort of present a treatment plan.
Absolutely. And the other important thing is to start preparing for how the individual is going to receive treatment when they're released, because most of our patients will be released into the community. And I think that the programs that are most effective are those that have established linkages with treatment facilities in the community, where the patient can be referred directly to receive ongoing substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, and medical treatment. That's the best way to avoid recidivism, the high recidivism rates that we unfortunately see among many of the patients that we care for.
That's a really good point, because it seems a bit unfair that corrections agencies might have to manage this treatment by themselves and not really know what's going to happen when they do walk out the door.
You're right. We really do need to look at this as a larger public health cooperative effort. We will only have these patients for a short period of time for the most part. Most of our patients do go home, and most of the sequelae of the disease that they develop will be later. Most of the severe opportunistic infections or cancers are going to develop after they've left. And so it really is important for correctional healthcare staff and public health staff to work together to try to put in place a good treatment plan for our individuals.
And that's a really good point, considering that the public will be and could be exposed to someone who may not be continuing their treatment otherwise.
You're right. It can be looked at as an enormous challenge, but I choose to look at it as an enormous public health opportunity. I really think that those of us who choose to work in correctional health care are on the front line in this effort. And if we have appropriate resources and these public health collaborative efforts, that we can make a tremendous impact, not just on the health of our patients, but also on the health of the nation.
That's a great point. Thank you so much. That concludes today's live talk. Thank you to Dr. Joseph Bick for participating in our program today.
You're welcome, Michelle.
It was great to have you. To learn more on this issue, be sure to read the articles featured this week on www.corrections.com. Also, visit the HEP Report website at www.hivcorrections.org for more information on HIV treatment and the treatment of other infectious diseases in the correctional setting. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.